Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ball for Brian Zaragoza, his second chance of the night. This is outstanding! What a goal from Zaragoza! The pass from Gumba was brilliant, but the youngster still had a mountain to climb, and he has climbed it in some style.
Hello everyone, we've had goals, comebacks, late drama, history made, a regular dose of polemica, new appointments, a goodbye, and maybe a couple more to come. It's been a dramatic weekend in La Liga. We always say this, but every time it delivers. I'm your host, Matt Clark, here for the La Liga Lowdown Matchday 9 recap. Paco joins me just after celebrating his birthday. Paco, feliz cumpleaños, and how are you?
Very well. You know, the 37 aren't taking a toll on my well-renowned optimism most of the time. But yeah, it was a great weekend personally, and also, obviously, if we speak about football, many, many things happening, like many talking points, plenty of drama to boot, and cannot wait to go to deliver our full-fledged analysis on what has been a very feisty weekend on La Liga.
Let's start where we've just finished off then, at Granada. Incredible game. 17 seconds in, Brian Zaragoza, who was outstanding in the game, especially in the first half, he took the lead against the sleepy Barca. Ter Stegen looked pretty sloppy on that goal, but the fans chanting for him to be called up by Spain. He could have had a hat-trick in the game, but once again, Barca find themselves 2-0 down, but fight hard to come from behind and think they've got a winner at the very end, but Paco wasn't to be. Ended up 2-2. What a game.
Yeah, I think that Granada deserved much more, especially after the first half that they delivered. They were pretty unlucky with both that Brian Zaragoza smashed to the post late in the second half, and also especially with the way they allowed Barca to cut their difference in half with that Lamine Yamal goal in the 46th minute. I think we're already on the extra time in the first half. And I think that Barca were able to cling to the game thanks to that goal in that particular minute. Because throughout the first half, I think it was Granada's game overall. As you said, Brian Zaragoza was absolutely superb in all of his runs, all of his plays. The second goal that he scored was simply amazing. The way he, just sent to the ground his defenders, and he dribbled his way past Barca's defense, which is obviously not that easy. And the way he finished clinically into the angle, and overall, this is kind of career making games for players like Brian Zaragoza, who has been, as we've said many times in this podcast, after every match day in our recaps, he has been, for most of the games, one of the shining spots for Granada. And in this case, it seemed that Paco López was, just prone to once again deliver the miracle against one of the massive sides in La Liga. But as he did back in the day with Levante against both Barça and Real Madrid, Atletico. But in this case, Barça always find a way to come back. They don't do it in a way which can be highlighted. It's not in a spectacular fashion. I think it's more like some sort of survival instinct kicking in for Barca. But Sergi Roberto scoring with only 5 minutes to go. Once again, not the best show from Granada's defense. But again, ultimately, Barca had the chance of winning the game. You know, Joao Felix had a disallowed goal with plenty of controversy because it seemed that he was onside. Vallejo was the one, you know, breaking the offside position. And ultimately, the referee decided that Ferran Torres had also influenced the play. So, yeah, his call was disallowing the Joao Felix goal. And obviously, Xavi wasn't happy. Barca players weren't happy, but if we, you know, go straight to the bottom line, I think that the end, the scoreline was fair because Barca were able to bounce back just at the end and scrape 1 point, and Granada did almost everything that they were expected and even more to pick up the 3 points. They were unable to do so, but overall their effort was excellent.
It certainly was, and of course, in all the drama, Lamine Yamal became the youngest ever scorer in La Liga history, 16 years, 87 days, breaking the record from the Malaga player from 2012. Yeah, Granada, they're unbeaten in 4 games against Barca now, going back to their previous time in La Liga, so it's a really kind of a good effort from them to maintain that run against such a strong side as Barca. As you say, the persistence paid off for Xavi's side, just about getting the draw. But they're the only side in La Liga who haven't lost a game yet in any competition, but they are now 3 points off the top. And if Atleti were to win their game in hand, they'd go above them as well. So Barca, in terms of points per game, fourth in the table right now. Do you think there's a few issues there? Because we've seen a few games now. Celta were 2-0 up, they managed to come back. There was those 2-5-0 wins, but then since then, there was the draw in Mallorca, the narrow win over Sevilla, the suffering in Porto, and then tonight the 2-2 here in Granada. Do you think there's some issues there for Xavi to work on over the international break?
Well, I think that we have become, you know, used to Xavi always stating in his press conferences that Barca are expected both to win and to do it in a spectacular fashion or with plenty of flair and plenty of style. And I wouldn't say that because last season, for example, Barca won the league actually in a landslide in the final 10 games because of their efficiency, both at the back and when having chances in front with their attacking players. So that efficiency has been lost. They have been allowing more goals this season so far, especially when compared to last year. And yeah, Lewandowski's absence obviously is pretty problematic for Xavi because there's no like single proper replacement as a number 9, but overall Ferran Torres has been playing and scoring for most of the time. Lamine Yamal has been, as you said, one of the biggest discoveries of the season for them, and with this goal he's not only assisting but also contributing in that sense. And once again, he, you know, this season he has become the record breaker for most of the La Liga history books. And yeah, his goal tonight was pretty important for his side in order to turn around what had become a very harsh and rough game for them to that point.
Indeed, yes. We'll see how they get on after the break. The Clásico coming around very, very soon. Granada, for them, they stay in the relegation zone, but they are now 3 unbeaten after 3 consecutive draws. So brighter spots for them. Let's head to Madrid now, and the two big capital sides both had wins this weekend, but in very different fashion. Mm. Let's start with Atleti, 14th win in a row at the Metropolitano, so it is a fortress, but that's 3 in a row they've had to suffer. From Cadiz last weekend, 2-0 down, Feyenoord took the lead in the Champions League in midweek, and then again, Real Sociedad levelled the game late and were the better side in that second half, but that controversial penalty from converted by Antoine Griezmann against his former club was the difference. Oyarzabal is in fine form, 5-5, but he was pretty angry after the game. Manos. Paco, over to you.
This game shows how convincing Atleti have been, especially if you take a look at their first half. But at the same time, it showed their weaknesses and that a well-equipped and well-prepared team can really harm them if they are both effective and efficient in their plays. For example, in Real Sociedad's goal to level the game, I think that was absolutely brilliant. The way You know, they just came up with a counter very, very quickly with a play to the wing. Carlos Hernández was able to just get the ball under his control with the heel. And then, you know, he was able to turn around his head. He saw Oyarzabal in the run and his pass was absolutely perfect. Oyarzabal with the control on the run and finally finishing clinically. It was quality overall the whole play. It was like such quality in every single touch. And that showed that Real Sociedad are, you know, ultimately a Spanish side with their own limitations whenever, you know, signing players and so on and trying to come up with a competitive squad. But you could see that if you extrapolate that to Champions League, you can understand why Atletico have been, you know, finding some trouble and struggling, for example, in that opening game against Lazio and allowing that goal in the last minute, because Atletico and 99% of sides are just unable to stop those kind of counters. And Real Sociedad did it brilliantly. Until that point, you know, Atletico have been able to control the game. They had more shots on the opposite goal. Samuel Lino had opened the scoreline in the first half. But yeah, when the game was maybe at its peak of interest, with both teams just going at it, two different plays showed the big issue that we have at this point in this country with both the VAR and the refereeing. And I want to state this at this point in our chat, but this weekend was absolutely awful, almost in all fronts, regarding the refereeing in games and the VAR using of the tool. I think that I would say 10 out of 10 in every single ground we did have, you know, bigger or smaller controversies with both the refereeing and the VAR. And in second division, we had like blatantly, blatant robberies to some teams like Amorebieta, who were stolen off a goal, which was the most perfect and legal goal ever. And, you know, the referee was just in front of the play and ultimately the VAR corrected his call. It was horrible. And this weekend is very damning on all of the corporate stuff and on all of the, you know, referee committee, which should severely, at this point, they should severely sit down and talk seriously about what is going on, because this might be the worst season with the worst offenses in this case. And in this particular game, there was a very dubious handball of Morata inside Atletico's box, which wasn't even considered by the referee. And further along the road in the 89th minute, with both sides just duking it out, Carlos Fernández was on the floor, on the ground, with his hands, obviously one of them on the ground because he was trying to get up inside the box and just the ball just hit his hand and then was deflected. The referee decided that it was a clear penalty. And I can absolutely understand the anger, the desperation, and just the pure defenselessness of Real Sociedad's players, because they deserved something positive in this game and they left empty-handed because of a very, very controversial call. So I'm not saying that Atletico didn't deserve something positive, obviously, but I think that the 3 points was too much of a reward for Cholo Simeone's men.
Yeah, I think now it's not just the Premier League, as we've seen. Now it's with handballs and with offsides. I think when you see that play of Carlos Fernández, you think, yeah, it's very harsh, but these days you kind of expect it to be given. And in a way, that's such a sad thing because it's, I don't know, it's a question of what the players do with their arms. It's, you know, it's almost impossible for them to avoid that kind of impact. But yet at the same time, you can see why if the team, you know, that once the penalty doesn't get it, that'd be a polemic the other way. So there's really, it's no easy answer with this, but it does seem that with handballs and offsides, the subjectivity level is just growing and that isn't great for the game at all. But yeah, let's move on to the other side of Madrid. Real taking on Osasuna, yet another exhibition of Jude Bellingham. It's remarkable that the records he's continuing to kind of match the pace for. He scored 10 goals in his first 10 Real Madrid games, which equals Cristiano Ronaldo's level of impact. Plus, he's got 3 assists on top of that. Osasuna scoring again at the Bernabeu, Sergio Herrera saving a penalty again at the Bernabeu. But Paco, I just wonder, obviously Madrid were rampant here, but I wonder if you can think of any other player that's had this much of an impact coming, especially a foreign player coming into La Liga and just starting like a train. I'm guessing maybe Luis Suarez, of course, but he had the ban to get over first. That's the kind of only one I can think of, obviously post-Cristiano. Would you have any other candidates there?
But at the same time, I remember quite vividly the first season of Cristiano Ronaldo over in Real Madrid, which was, I believe, 2009. And his impact wasn't the same. You know, Cristiano eventually would become like Real Madrid's main weapon to, you know, for scoring and assisting and winning games and so on. But his impact wasn't even close to what Bellingham is doing at this point in over in Real Madrid. I think that even the most optimistic Real Madrid fans couldn't expect that this player would perform at this level, both inside the pitch and outside of it. Because one of the you know, the biggest traits or the biggest advantages of Jude Bellingham, in my view, is just how well rounded off his character is. You know, he's a massive asset for Real Madrid inside the pitch. But whenever he speaks over in press conferences or in flash interviews or so on, he obviously has his Hanley translator beside him. But he's so well-spoken, so polite, so respectful, so, you know, well-mannered.
Comfortable.
Yeah, he's so comfortable. He has slipped very comfortably into what being a Real Madrid superstar means. Because being a Real Madrid superstar, and I think some of his teammates should take a, you know, a page of his book, means much more than performing well in games. And Jude Bellingham has been scoring left and right and assisting and being massive for his team. But also, he has embodied that kind of swagger and behavior that a Real Madrid player should have outside the pitch. So in that sense, you know, Real Madrid couldn't have been more spot on and hit a larger bullseye than whenever they, you know, decided to go after Bellingham and paying that hefty price tag back in the day. And yeah, regarding the game, once again, you know, he scored very, very early, and that disarmed, in a way, what Osasuna were going to be able to do, because Osasuna wanted a more cagey game, trying to keep the goalless score for quite a while more. But, you know, opening the score so early in El Bernabeu, at El Bernabeu, is always, you know, bad news for the opposition. And they polished the game in, you know, in 10, 15 minutes during the second half with Bellingham's second goal, Vinicius taking advantage of all the confusion and scoring the third one, and finally Joselu scoring the fourth. Also wanted to highlight, as you said, Sergio Herrera stopping that penalty and his celebration. You know, he decided to celebrate you know, happily inside the pitch. And he obviously gained the criticism and chanting of "tonto, tonto" from the stands. Something which back in the day Ancelotti surely criticized when that happened over at Mestalla. But it seemed that as this had happened over in his own ground, Ancelotti didn't consider it something remarkable over in the press conference. And also Sergio Herrera was, you know, responsible enough to apologize for it later. He didn't stand beside his own behavior. So that is also something which some of the players should also take, you know, take advice from what happened. An overall easy win for Real Madrid. They have been very impressive so far this season. And, you know, they are top of the league, deservedly so, because they have been absolutely unstoppable both ways, you know, both at their own ground and also whenever they have left El Bernabeu.
Indeed. And with those defensive absentees, they still managed to keep a clean sheet too. So looking good for them ahead of the international break, just that one defeat to Atletico Madrid in the derby. Rounding off the top four, it was a narrow win, but it was yet another win for Girona. Michel was celebrating being named manager of the month for the last month. And yeah, Girona, another win, 1-0 over Cadiz. Alex Garcia with the winner. They go into the break second in the table, ahead of Barca, ahead of Atleti. What is their ceiling this season, Paco?
I think that we talked about this, or maybe I did it with Mr. Barlow in our midweek podcast a few days ago, but I think that if we do the math regarding their current points on the standings and their you know, calendars and schedules and so on, I think they are on their way to a top six finish, like hands down, because I think that history are on their behalf. Whenever a team has started a season so well with 22 points out of the first 27, which is absolutely mind-blowing, ultimately they always end like top six or even top four. But that would be a bit more, you know, uncertain, because I don't know if they are, they have the tools in their toolbox to keep up the pace and, you know, duke it out with points and with wins against Atletico, Real Sociedad, and other sides who might, you know, surprise everyone, like Athletic Club, who are doing it quite interesting season so far. Betis are also improving their own their own performance with 4 games without losing. So Girona are at this point just coasting in their good form, and this game wasn't their most brilliant, but you know, it was very easy for them to ultimately beat Cadiz, because Darwin Machis was I think he lost his mind with that challenge very early in the game, in the 10th, 11th minute, I believe. And that red card, you know, surely manhandled Cadiz against Girona. They had to double their efforts, you know, 10 men on the pitch, one man down, 80 minutes to go. Very tough on Cadiz, and yeah, Girona just cooked the game very slowly. They took their time, and ultimately, with half an hour to go, Alex García was the one in charge of firing home and scoring that 1-0 away, which once again, you know, proves that Mitchell knows his stuff, because he actually performed quite a few rotations in his players, especially in the second half. You know, he's trying to get involved everyone. He's trying to have that kind of 16, 18 player rotation squad instead of always playing with the same 11 every single weekend. And yeah, poor Cadiz were very, you know, very harmed by that red card so early, and they only had like 2 shots on target, which is very damning for a team who are, you know, so low in the standings. Girona monopolized the ball. They had over 75% of ball possession so throughout the game, and yeah, I think that the win was deserved for Girona, but again, it was eased by Cadiz on pitfalls.
Yeah, moment of madness from Machis on his Venezuelan teammate, who, as Rory jokes, is probably flying for the internationals with him together. So, yeah, be interesting to see what they talk about on that journey. We'll have to leave it there for part one. When we come back, we'll talk about all the other matches, 6 of them, and some more drama and some more managers under pressure, and a couple, or one in and one out. So stay with us.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Sevilla marca la grúa, marca Youssef En-Nesyri al rescate, en el córner, en la última acción del partido.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We had some thrilling games, not least on Saturday night, with Rayo going 2-0 up in the Sánchez Pizjuán, but then Sevilla came from 2-0 down with an En-Nesyri equaliser in extremis, but it wasn't enough to save José Luis Mendilibar, because Sunday evening, just about when Lamine Yamal was becoming the record scorer, youngest scorer in La Liga, Sevilla were officially sacking Mendilibar. Their position is pretty poor. They're in a worse position than at this time last season. At that point, Lopetegui had already gone. So, yeah, results this season, it's hard to argue. Of course, it's a very strange legacy because he came in, did so well, gave them comfortable safety in the league, won the Europa League, of course. But this season, again, the same old problems for Sevilla.
I think even more, because Sevilla has been living inside their own turmoil for almost a couple of seasons already, with all of the, you know, in some sense they remind me to Valencia back in the day, you know, with all of the inner stabbings between shareholders and José María del Nido on the outside, and Pepe Castro trying to retain his power as the president, and, you know, press taking sides, fans taking sides, the Peñas being very demanding on the squad, the squad not really responding on top of the pitch, Monchi making big mistakes last season with the way the squad was built. But ultimately bringing Mendilibar was that kind of, you know, ultimate salvation tool for them, because as you said, when he came in, Sevilla were just scraping by, avoiding relegation spots, and he finished, I believe, in a very comfortable place above the 10th spot. And at the same time, he was able to, you know, beat massive sides in the Europa League, Manchester United, Juventus. So, yeah, the task that he did with I wouldn't say lackluster a squad, but a squad with weaknesses in its building was remarkable. But whenever something is half broken and you don't really mend it and solve the issues, they are going to come back and plague your performance. And Monchi left with the market half gone, with not that kind of margin to just course correct, and, you know, bringing in Victor Horta to do the final signings, and not really, you know, building a squad with the approval and the green light and the thumbs up of the manager, and you can actually see that with the, you know, the Fernando issue with that sub in the 35th minute, I believe, in the first half. Rayo Vallecano were already 2-0 up over at the Sánchez Pizjuán, and, you know, I think Mendilibar wasn't really smart, because you can understand the place where he was coming from, that Sevilla needed a shake-up in the midfield, but you don't sub Fernando, which is both the captain and one of the most beloved players for the fan base, and expect Fernando to, you know, be happy about that. And Fernando showed his disapproval. There was a little, you know, incident over in the sidelines, and that showed that Mendilibar was, or at least might have shown the board, that Mendilibar was losing control of the locker room. So if the decision was already like 80% made, I think that both the Fernando case and also obviously the another slip up home against Rayo Vallecano with the awful performance during the first half. Rayo Vallecano just running circles about around Sevilla, the fans booing, you know, everyone angry over at Sanchez-Pizjuan. The board, I think that they had their minds made up at halftime. Even after, you know, cutting the advantage in half and En-Nesyri scoring in the 96th minute, Mendilibar was already on his way out, and yeah, he was finally executed, to say it in our own language, during this Sunday. I don't think that football has been fair to Mendilibar. I think that this Sevilla job was possibly his most demanding throughout his career, but at the same time the prettiest one, or the most interesting one, or the happiest one, because Mendilibar was a manager who was used to managing misery most of his career. You know, very humble sides with no quality whatsoever, with plenty of limitations in almost every single position in the pitch. And when he came to Sevilla, he had a very powerful squad, unbalanced but powerful. And I think he did brilliantly at the you know, last stretch of the 22-23 season. But this year, this season was born in a very unbalanced way, and it didn't improve as weeks went by. So yeah, ultimately everyone knows what happens when a team doesn't really work. Goodbye Mendilibar, and good luck to the following manager, because this isn't going to be an easy season for Sevilla.
No, indeed. As you say, good luck to Mendilibar. We hope he returns at some point to La Liga. So salute to him and hasta luego. Another manager in a bit of trouble, or a lot of trouble. Marca called it a final. Celta taking on the football champagne of Getafe. They had to come from behind twice and were playing against 10 men for quite a lot of the game. But they did come from behind twice to avoid defeat. Celta 2, Getafe 2, it finished. Mason Greenwood, unfortunately, scoring his first goal for Getafe. I suppose the big question is that enough to keep Rafa in for the, you know, for after the international break?
I hope it does, for a number of reasons. The first one, obviously, is emotional in my case, because I've seen Rafa Benitez deliver greatness as a manager back in the day when he was at the helm over in Valencia. And, you know, watching Celta really make an effort and, you know, bring him in their centenary season with all of the celebrations and, you know, that kind of feisty and happy atmosphere surrounding everything. I think it's a juxtaposition of bad luck in some points in the first 9 games. And that maybe Benitez is trying to do things that this squad isn't really equipped to do. Because ultimately Celta de Vigo has this kind of DNA where they always try to go on the offense, even though Rafa Benitez has been, for most of his career, deemed as a defensive manager. So, you know, this game is the perfect encapsulation of all of the issues playing Celta, because Getafe scored very early with a massive mistake at the back. They were able to bounce back with Bamba scoring a great goal, by the way. As you said, Domingos Duarte was, he saw the second yellow and the red card consequentially, and Getafe were one man down. But 2 minutes later, Mason Greenwood was able to score the 2-1. And from that point on, you actually see the game, and I think Getafe had no shots on target throughout the remaining 60 minutes of the game. Larsen scored with 5 minutes to go in the first half, and I, at that point, thought that in the second half, Celta were going to be able to win the game. But, you know, 26 shots, 11 of them on target, 75% of ball possession for Celta. I think they did almost everything right, except for actually scoring. So yeah, champagne football is something which surely gets on the, you know, on every manager's nerves. Bordalas once again Bordalas'd the opposition, especially during the second half. You know, Getafe with their usual shithousery, which is in my book perfectly legal and perfectly understandable, especially when 10 men. But yeah, very unlucky for both Rafa Benitez and Celta, which, remember, they had one penalty in the first half. Iago Aspas missed. Well, he actually didn't miss, you know, the The keeper, David Soria, made a great save. And, you know, it was well deserved for the keeper. But ultimately, 13 corner kicks for Celta, only one for Getafe. Statistically, this game was massively won by Celta, but as Bordalás says, son los goles, amigo, and in goals, it was 2-2, unfortunately for Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, much better performance compared to the Alaves game, but yeah, the same result. So just a point for them, and he'll be kind of wondering whether he will be called into a meeting in a few days. But yeah, perhaps that will keep him in the job. As for Bacheta at Villarreal, I'm not so sure, because once again, Villarreal were pretty unconvincing at home. They lost to Las Palmas, who hadn't scored or won away from home all season. They make it back-to-back wins now. A great golazo from Saul Coco for a free kick just on half-time. They went 2-0 up through a penalty. Gerard Moreno cuts the deficit, but they couldn't quite force the equaliser. There were whistles at La Cerámica. Dani Parejo spoke after the game about that. Paco, I'm sure you're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not clicking for Pacheta at Villarreal.
Yeah, Parejo said that he's used to this kind of criticism from his own fan base, because he knows his stuff. You know, back in the day, over here in Valencia, he was one of the most criticized players, if not the most criticized player of the squad, but he was able to turn it around by pure and sheer quality and performance and delivery. But in this case, he said, as one of Villarreal's captains, that he surely prefers people booing at him and criticizing him and yelling at him than, you know, listening to his teammates being booed at, because he's a much more, you know, experienced and veteran player. And ultimately, Villarreal has their own high number of youngsters in their squad. But yeah, once again, Villarreal are finding it very tough, especially when playing at home this season. I don't know why. I don't know why they have been so lackluster when playing in front of their own fan base, which, by the way, didn't really respond in this game. You know, it was only half, obviously wasn't a full house, it was half attendance, only half of the stadium being empty. But yeah, Las Palmas did a great game throughout the first half, and they were able to knock it out of the park, especially at the end with that Saul Coco massive goal from very far away. The free kick was spectacular, and Jorgensen, the goalkeeper, just saw the ball swish past him. He couldn't do anything. And Marc Cardona scoring a penalty early in the second half, which was quite, you know, debatable. But yeah, once again, 2-0 up for Las Palmas. I understand that, you know, García Pimienta saw the game almost won at that point. And they were very close to losing it, because Gerard Moreno scored very, very late. But Villarreal had a couple of chances, clear chances, throughout the second half to cut the advantage in half. So overall, this season, Villarreal's season reminds me quite a lot of Sevilla's, because it was already born in a twisted way with Quique Setién, you know, following on the promises delivered last year, you know, ending the season on a high note, but the locker room not really liking his own methods and his criticism of the players and overall the habits which were being tried to, you know, uphold inside the club. And yeah, whenever a season is born in a twisted way, things don't really course correct on themselves. They need something more. And Pacheta, to this point, with only a couple of games under his belt, hasn't really been able to turn things around, bring once again the veteran players, the big players. Pepe Reina had a massive performance a couple of days ago in the Conference League, but you know, we didn't see him in this game. Jorgensen is obviously the starter. Parejo didn't have a good game. Albiol didn't have a good game. Juan Foyt has been a shadow of his former self. Gerard Moreno has been scoring, but it's not enough. And, you know, a couple of things are not clicking over in Villarreal, and that's the reason for them being at this point so low in the standings, because remember, Villarreal are 8 points, only two clear from danger, only two clear from the relegation spots, and obviously that is not going to sit well with both the fans and the management.
Their worst start since 2011-12, when they went down to Segunda, and with Sevilla also taking the decision to get rid of Mendilibar, maybe that will push them to also get rid of Pacheta, and then maybe even try and compete for the same manager again. The Andoni Iraola stock will only rise in a Spanish context. Athletic Club kicked off the weekend on Friday night with a very convincing win over Almeria. Almeria at that point, of course, still under the B-team's coach, the leadership of the B-team manager, but they have since appointed Gaizka Garitano. We'll get to that in a moment, but Athletic, they bounced back from the derby defeat with a goleada. Oyan Santet celebrating his Spain call-up with the goal. It was a pretty routine performance from Athletic, wasn't it?
Yes, especially when playing at home. I think that they have grown very comfortable whenever playing over at San Mamés. And, you know, the game was a massive performance. And stat-wise, the superiority of Athletic was unquestionable. You know, 23 shots, 9 of them on target. Almeria just, only one shot inside the three sticks in 90 minutes. 40% of ball possession for Almeria, 60% for Athletic Club. Their dominance was out of question. But, scoring early was a big advantage for them with that Guruceta opener. And then in the second half, Dani Garcia and Sanchez just polished the game. And you only have to check out the standings for Athletic Club, even if they lost last week's Basque derby. But they have bounced back once again. 3 wins out of the last 5 games. So that's how we explain their 5th place, just behind Atletico de Madrid. And only, for example, 4 points away from Barca, which is pretty remarkable.
Back above Real Sociedad, so if that's not a reason for that fan who went viral last week to keep smiling, then I'm not sure what is. Dani Garcia with his first goal for Athletic as well, worth mentioning that. Salute to him after many, many games without a goal for the club. And just to go back on your referee chat from earlier, I thought Iñaki Williams should have had a penalty here. He was like rugby tackled to the floor. Yeah.
My only explanation is that the VAR referee was at that specific point visiting the loo. Because if not, you just can't explain such a glaring omission.
Indeed. Anyway, we'll leave the ref chat there for now. We've obviously made some strong points there. Almeria then, winless in the league, bottom of the table. They've turned to Gaizka Garitano, a former Athletic Club coach, of course. The news again announced on Sunday night, so it's been a very busy Sunday evening for all of us. What do you think of that appointment, and can he save them, basically?
Well, my last experience with Gaizka Garitano was when I spoke only a couple of months ago with his second in command, Pachi Ferreira, when he was over in Eibar. Unfortunately for Eibar, they were unable to make it, and that's why Garitano left his job over in the summer. He had been waiting for an opportunity, and ultimately he has only been out of a job for 4 months. He's going to have to work quite a lot, because in some ways Almeria do have a squad which could battle and compete to avoid the drop. But at this point, the point deficit is already quite big, because if we see the standings, we're talking only 3 points for Almeria out of the first 27. But at the same time, if they win 2 games, just 2 games, they could get out of the bottom 3 very quickly. So Almeria do have relevant players. They have, in my view, a better squad than, for example, Alaves, Cadiz, Las Palmas, and I would say maybe on par with Getafe, because Getafe are, in my view, overachieving, picking point after point. You know, Bordalás' season is breaking many many predictions, but Almeria do have very interesting strikers. You know, the from midfield onwards, I think they are a very interesting side with Melero, Kone, Baba, Mbarba, Ramazzani, Baptistao. I don't know. I was watching well, Lázaro Vinicius also playing, Cesar Montes. I think that they are a decent squad, but it didn't work out for Vicente Moreno. And let's see if Gaizka Garitano and his new staff are able to pull off the miracle. Because if we think about the investment, I'm sure that if Garitano is able to do a decent, not good or notable, decent job from now till January, I'm sure that Almeria Sheikh will splurge a bit of cash on January in order to, you know, strengthen the squad even further. So Garitano has the chance. He has the expertise. Let's see if he has the luck needed to do so.
Yeah, I do like him. I think he strikes me as a decent man, and he's been quite unlucky. I think he showed a lot of honour. He took Eibar into La Liga in the first place, and when they originally were finished in the bottom three, he resigned to say, you know, I failed, yeah, essentially. But then it was Elche's demotion which ended up saving Eibar. And then, of course, when at Athletic, he took them to the final, but then COVID prevented him from having that postponement, meant that he was then sacked before they actually could play the final. And then, of course, last season with Eibar, we had that, yeah, as we've spoken about, that collapse. And then, he resigned, kind of saying, yep, I didn't achieve what I set out to achieve, so I'm walking. So yeah, he strikes me as a very honourable man, and yeah, let's hope he can get some luck and turn things around, because I think he's a very popular manager with fans. Moving on to the final two games of the match day, both 1-1 draws, Mallorca Valencia and Alaves Betis. Paco, talk about this whichever way you want. We had the kids to the rescue again for Ruben Baraja, yeah. Diego Lopez equalising on half time. And Alaves Betis, a couple of really strange goals. Ayoze Perez tucking in after Sivera couldn't hold the shot. And then a really bizarre own goal. Claudio Bravo makes a great save from a header. And then it just cannons off Bellerin into the net. So it finished 1-1 in both games. Kind of hard to judge these teams. They seem to be kind of treading water in the middle of the table a little bit. Alaves a bit lower. But the other sides, they all seem to be in the middle, not really pulling up many trees, but also not in major danger.
Yeah, because especially in Betis' case, they have quality players, and that ultimately makes a difference in most of these cagey games. This one in particular was very bizarre, with those two weird plays in the first half, with that opening Sivera mistake past the halftime mark, and Ayoze Perez taking advantage of it, and just minutes later that, as you said, Claudio Bravo, spectacular save, but the ball just jettisoned into Héctor Bellerín's body, and you know the defender just couldn't move. He couldn't react. The ball just deflected on him and went trickled into Betis's goal. So no way back in that sense, and nothing to do in that sense for Betis's defender. The second half was quite interesting by Alaves, because they had more chances, they had more opportunities to generate danger, but ball possession was Betis's. So after watching Betis play against Valencia only a couple of days ago, and just driving Valencia to the ground and thrashing Valencia around, I was pretty disappointed with the way Betis performed. And I think that they are going to find themselves in trouble quite a lot this season away from El Villamarín, because they just don't seem consistent enough to deliver a streak of positive results week after week. Whereas for Alaves, unfortunately for them, they are finding problems to score, and that is what is, you know, dragging down Luis García's men's efforts. And regarding the other game, you know, once again, you know, Valencia were able to snatch 1 point on the road, breaking a bit their latest streak of negative results. And it came in a very unsuspected way, because Diego Lopez scored an absolutely brilliant header, which was so difficult to score, you know, turning the neck in very unnatural ways, like just the Exorcist girl style, you know, just turning it more than it should. but it, you know, it got the job done. It leveled the game in the extra time in the first half. Dani Rodriguez has scored a very early goal, you know, once again, letting Valencia's weaknesses to shine. Valencia players looked very tired. Injuries have been piling up for them. I think that this game left nobody happy. You know, Aguirre was very, very angry after the game because his own players are just unable to finish the job. And Valencia players were very angry because of a, you know, clear as day penalty over Hugo Duro, which should have been, you know, at least VAR reviewed. And, you know, in my view and in most Valencianistas' view, it was a very, very clear pen. So overall, not the best. It was a very lacking game. The quality was very low. I stated that during the game on Twitter, and many people agreed. It was a very poor game overall.
Yeah, a poor game. That's why it's on last on this podcast. And that
it wasn't really the best one. Yeah, we had many, many others which deserved the spotlight rather than Mallorca Valencia.
Absolutely. And on that note, we better leave it where it is. A dramatic match day with plenty of drama and goals and controversies, as we said. Hopefully, we've covered all of it for you. We'll be back midweek with updates on all the La Liga lines, including Sevilla's search for a new manager and any potential further departures. And then, of course, back to international break. Spain taking on Scotland in Seville. We'll be back with that. Paco, thank you so much for your time this Sunday evening.
Thank you for the chat, and thanks everyone for listening. And remember, guys, that we have a midweek podcast, which is locked behind bars. And if you want to unlock it, you should upgrade your Substack subscription. Do it. Do it. Take advantage of this puente, which is like a long weekend that we have over here in Spain. Take advantage of that. Unlock all the goodies that we have for you, and get your premium subscription.
Indeed. Just a fiver. Just a fiver. Plenty of content, podcast, extra articles. It's all there for you, just waiting behind those bars. Paco, thank you very much once again. We'll leave you with that record-breaking goal from Lamine Yamal as we play out. So thank you very much. Hasta luego.
Gol de Lamine Yamal. Pendientes del VAR porque la posición es de riesgo, podríamos decir, del chaval que coge en 16 años y 87 días y a la espera de lo que diga la maquinita, inscribe su nombre en la historia de la liga porque se convierte en el goleador más joven en hacerlo. Lamine Yamal al rescate.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.